Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, outside Vicarage Road after Watford 1, Wigan 1. I'm John, Mike's here.
Well, the Ashes was when they burnt the bales, wasn't it, when England lost to Australia for the first time.
Yeah.
I think we need to burn today's programme to signify the end of the Watford season and perhaps play for that. Every time we play Wigan, we play for the, don't know what it'd be called, but yeah, all right.
The programme.
How are you?
Yeah. Yeah, fine. Jason?
You can't burn the programme because what will they do in Hornet Heaven?
And DCW.
I'm on the floor after that.
Yeah.
I cannot believe what I've just seen. We were so good in the first half, albeit only scored one goal, which was in the end came back to be the death of us, really. But to, that second half was just ridiculous on every single level. No one involved covered themselves in any glory, either team or the ref. I suppose Wigan got a goal and they did what they did to get a point. They're bottom of the league. But they're bottom of the league.
Not only that, Dave, bottom of the league and haven't been paid. This is a club that is an absolute, you know, we've spoken in the past week and over the last months, years, about the problems that Watford have got here. Wigan are facing points deductions, they've run out of money, their players haven't been paid, and that is what a team can do, though. They can come to a club that is supposedly in a playoff shake-up and really, probably, think on another day they could have won it. And I'm gonna take you to task a little bit, Dave. I think the first half performance was what you'd expect it to be against a team. It was like a training exercise at times. It was like attack versus defence. Wigan set their stall out very, very early. Time wasting, all that disrupting. Fair enough, they're adrift at the bottom of the table. Watford are miles better than them. They've got to do whatever they've got to do. Watford were summarily unable to set the tempo during that first half. They looked good, but one goal to show for it. And not really much else, to be perfectly frank. The tempo was nowhere near what it should have been. That team was there. Wigan were absolutely there for the taking. Watford should have been high on confidence after scoring three goals against a team in a similar state in Birmingham, who, incidentally, I think were winning away at QPR, by the way, which shows just how poor that performance at QPR was. We saw how bad Birmingham was. You don't need me to go on about that. Watford weren't able to deal with Wigan to the extent that they have to. Set the tempo, put them to the sword, win 4-0, get your feet up and get ready for Luton. The tempo wasn't there for me throughout the game. And in the second half, Watford were asleep. And I'm with Dave. That was pathetic. The second half was as lamentable as I've seen all season. And for me, it sums up perfectly the entirety of this season. A hodgepodge, half-arsed effort that is nowhere near good enough for this football club and its stated aims.
They looked exhausted, didn't they, second half?
Really did.
And I think a part of that's probably conceding again at the start of the second half. And we talked about the Birmingham game and how difficult the start of the second half was there, and the same thing happened where we came out not, as you say, not fully up on the tempo. And I thought the first half, we talk about the tempo, Mike, I thought first half tempo was all right. I thought the tempo was decent enough. Again, you see Backman moving the ball quickly when he picks it up, the defenders moving it quickly when they've got the ball and not lots of sideways passes. We're trying to move the ball forwards, throw-ons, we're picking the ball up early, looking around quickly, looking for a man. We're not hanging around. The tempo is decent. I thought it was quality that cost us more, not getting more goals in the first half. But second half, yeah, we failed to clear a corner. We probably had two or three opportunities to get rid of the ball, to get it out of danger. We let it back in. It was a decent header. Backman looked disappointed that he still didn't manage to save it. And that just seemed to suck the life out of us. All of a sudden, the movement that we have from the midfield, that sort of interchangeability, the movement that we had on front, just seemed to go in a moment. And just as the game went on, we just looked more tired and more tired, and they looked more likely to score, didn't they? And if it wasn't for a great block by Kafka, I think about 10 minutes ago, that would have been a winner for Wigan.
Dave, you did talk about the first half. You said it was enjoyable. Did you put the second half down to Watford being, as Jason sort of said, very nothingness and tired and whatever, or, you know, did Wigan try and do something or another to do something to spoil the game?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know why there was such a disparity in the levels of performance between the first and second half, because I know what Mike said. I sort of take his point, but I think we were we were on the front foot in the first half. I turned around to you at half time and said, hey, that was fun. I enjoyed that because we were positive. We were doing the right things. We were getting the ball into the right areas. The only thing we didn't do was get on the end of several really good crosses from Ken Semmer, putting a few brilliant balls and no one got on the end of them. Pedro has to score that chance where he gets unexpectedly put through. Mm. He tried to take too many touches and he's made it too hard for himself. He just take one touch, roll it past the keeper.
Still should have scored, I thought. He got past the keeper. It still looked a decent enough angle and he didn't get it right, did he?
Absolutely. And I think you're right. We should have been out of sight in the first half. Even Tuesday we were 2-0 up and Birmingham nearly got back into the game because we should have scored 3 or 4 in that first half, and it was a similar performance in some ways. I think we've seen today what could have happened on Tuesday, but Wigan actually got the goal this time and they got themselves back into the game. Then they were able to just do what they've been doing anyway and just frustrate us, and they played some good football at times. They got it down, they got it into decent areas, and as Jason said, they could have scored another goal, but we failed to deal with the challenge in front of us. We were giving the ball to Pedro and Luzer in the hope that they would make something happen, and they were overplaying it. Pedro was trying little 1-2s constantly and they just never coming off. I noticed for some reason, I don't know whether this is by design or just by the way things happen, but Luzer in the first half was always on the left in that sort of half space in the inside left channel, combining with Ken Semmer and with Pedro, and it worked really well. In the second half, for some reason, he found himself on the opposite side in the right-hand sort of channel, and that means he was always getting the ball pulled back to him by Ngakia or Gaspar or Asprilla, whoever's out wider than him. And that means he has to come inside on his left to try and, which he did once and he hit the post with that shot. But instead of being able to play a first-time ball whipped cross with his right foot, which he didn't want to do, but that's what the sort of ball into him lends itself to. And then it kept breaking down in those little areas. It just nothing knitted together well, and we just didn't have enough about us to deal with the challenge. And you could feel, for all the positivity around the ground in the first half, which there was a good atmosphere in the first half, the life got sucked out of the place. Every time a Wigan player went down, the fans got more frustrated, more angry. The referee was getting dog's abuse from me and everyone else around us. Like,
there was a bit where Deesto literally stood up. I've never seen him shout so loud and so directly at the referee. Very proud of him.
I think what happened was we should have been out of sight in the first half. It's great to draw parallels with that Birmingham game, because Birmingham came out of the traps and could have been 2-2 within 10 minutes. And we would have been having this conversation on Tuesday as well. I think what happened was, I said to you, Lance, we need to keep our heads in the first half because we're demonstrably better footballers, demonstrably a better team. Wigan's season is all but done, really. All we need to do now is keep doing what we're doing, keep our heads. And we did the exact opposite.
What do you mean by keep our heads? Because I thought you meant like get drawn into all the
that,
but I didn't think we did.
Well, no, but they didn't. But what they did do was they got increasingly frantic as that second half went on. And I do get that when you're reaching for something, when you're trying to make it happen, when it hasn't been happening previously. I think a good example, and I'm not digging him out in particular, but for the last 20 minutes, if you watch the balls Keenan Davis was playing, started off misplacing one by a little bit, and then it got incrementally worse.
Well, we know he can't last 90 minutes.
I'm not digging out him at all. I think that's an example of just how far away, instead of getting closer, we were getting further away. It's almost like when you're in quicksand. The more you sort of try and scurry to get out, the more you find yourself in danger because you create that. I'm not sure the science behind it, but and you could feel it. As Dave said, it was a mixture between the frustration and seeing what's happened and that sort of almost overwhelming knowledge that we needed to get something out of it. And you could feel it in the ground. It was sort of being torn in different directions. We didn't know whether to be upset with how Watford were playing, with how the ref handled it, with Wigan for being absolute shithouses. All we knew, it was going really, really badly wrong, really, really quickly in front of our eyes. And that, I think, either translated to the players, but it was coming from the other way, because there were 4 substitutions in that second half for Watford. Some of them really bold, some of them interesting. None of them worked, I would have said. None of them were able to keep us a foothold in the game. And you could argue, if we'd have just kept going the way we were, we'd have potentially been more likely to get back into the game. At least he tried something. Mm. But by the end, how many defenders did we have on the pitch? What was the midfield? What was the plan for unlocking this increasingly resolute defence? Nothing. It was, Geordie is hilarious. I've rubbed off him, and finally I think I've broken him. And he does this, he says, let's see how many shots on target we get in this final period. as in this must-win game. Yeah. And invariably, it's Nafal. And that, I'm afraid, paints a pretty damning picture of this side. And obviously, everyone will be talking about today, but it isn't just about today. That is this season for me. Flashes of what could have been completely overridden and sort of the taste ruined by the reality, which is a side that has been unable to gel at any stage, really, this season. We're still looking at perhaps two isolated performances this year for really, really good performances from this Watford side, which the reality of that with the squad that we've had and have available to us is it's criminal, really. And what obviously we've now got to stew on that
over the
international break. And I tell you what, if that Watford side can't put up with James McLean doing what James McLean's been doing for 20 years and whoever it was for Wigan going down, you wait, lads, until you get to Kenilworth Road. You wait till you get in there and there's 10,000 people wanting to tear you limb from limb, hurling abuse at you from half a yard away. All manner of detritus headed your way. You wait till you see the looks, looking at them, the whites of their eyes. You think Wigan's a handful, you wait till then. And now the season has gone in terms of the playoffs. And quite frankly, good. Because if this side turned up in the playoffs against a team who's been performing on a regular basis, we'd get our asses handed to us. We are not fit to challenge for promotion. Now, the job of work is damage limitation to make sure we don't embarrass ourselves in the derby. And that's awful that's now what we're focusing on. That's it. I think Dave's looking at the table, and I might be throwing that. might be throwing the baby out of the bath. Well, not like me, I know. But
Geordie's got his wilder goose chase thing, and he said if we didn't win today, then his sort of markers he had meant that we weren't going to get there. Dave, are you feeling like there's a possibility, or are you feeling like it'd be nice, and maybe as Mike sort of feels there, we shouldn't?
I'm always on the more optimistic side of things when it comes to the table and that sort of thing. Yet, look, based on everything we've seen this season, based on that performance, it's unlikely that we will get to the playoffs because I don't think anything's going to dramatically suddenly change after the international break. But on paper, we're 5 points off the playoffs. And a lot of teams around us drew today, I think. Mm. So it's not, you know, we can still go on a little run if we did manage to somehow, and we would be in the mix, we'd be in contention. We might find ourselves on the final day being able to get into the playoffs. We probably won't, based on all the available evidence, but we shouldn't just write it off. And you don't want the players to write it off. You want Wilder to be in there with them saying, come on, we've still got to keep going. Because if there is even the smallest percentage chance that we can get out of this division this season, it would be huge for us. I'm absolutely not one of those people that says, we'd be rubbish to go up, we'd be torn apart, we'd have a terrible team. All those things might be true. You can't give up.
Like the irony being, of course, that to get there, we need a massive shift in momentum. We need a big, big run, like you say, Dave. And if we do have that big run, then we are the team going into the playoffs with the momentum. And all of a sudden, it's hard sort of concept to grasp at the moment, but I'm sort of trying to think how I would feel if we were hitting. If you think about the last two playoff attempts we've had, the one was the first season under the Pozzo where we felt like we were building something from sort of late autumn, early winter. And it was sort of built this crescendo of the playoff semi-final, Deeney goal, and getting to the final. And that was a great run. Then you had before that was the Boothroyd season, where we were great at the start. The wheels absolutely came off heading into the playoffs, and we got smashed by Hull. I'm not really sure how I'd feel if we get to the playoffs this time, because it, like you say, I mean, Mike's used the phrase car crash of a season, which it has been. It would take something momentous to now get there. But if we do, where are we in the pecking order?
If we do, the if is just enormous. We talked about two seasons where we've gone into the playoffs. The thing that we cannot avoid about this season is that for 90% of the time, it's been largely, and I'm going to be inarticulate here, it's been crap. They have never at any stage really looked like a team. look like a side, look like a team that is on the up or is capable of winning the 6 out of 8 that we now need to win in a row. And I take both of your points on board. Nothing would please me more for us to extend our season, to upset the apple cart, to have another poke in the eye of everyone who's written us off. I'll poke myself in the eye. In disbelief, really. I've been robbing them so hard if Watford did end up in the playoffs. But you have to contextualise this season against all those others. If we got into the playoffs, well, yes, we would have come on we would have done so on the back of an incredible run of form. 6 or 7 wins out of 8, it's going to have to be. So you'd fancy us. But the chances of that, on the evidence we've seen, are just so negligible that it feels, to be honest, it just feels laughable to talk about it. And yeah, Dave's right. And one person who definitely hasn't given up or is certainly feeling the stress already here at Vicarage Road is Chris Wilder. He got stuck right in to Sean Maloney. They had a real proper Barney. I think it was about the ins and outs of whether we were going to give the ball back after one of their players had, get this, one of their players went down injured for treatment. And there was a massive to-do there. So, you know, they're feeling it. And there's no question that I don't believe that this team isn't trying. I don't believe that's been the case at any time this season. I don't believe that they're rubbish players. I don't believe
it's confidence, isn't it? It must be confidence. The fact that they're not able to put them more than one win together, and when they concede, you can see the life sucks out of them. They must be struggling sort of with their confidence.
They're not a team. No. You can't, Dave. You play on a Sunday morning, lads. You've played a lot of football, John. You're playing at the moment. You know you need to look left and look right and go, yes, he's in this with me, and I'm in it with him, and I know what they're going. You know, they've got.
We've only got 11 players tomorrow, actually, if you fancy it.
God, he was joking, by the way, as he said that. Not even David, not even his team had me. But they're not a team.
No.
They haven't. They've never meshed together. They've never knitted together. They are not. And I think that some level of criticism has to be levelled at the players for that. Because once you cross the line, you need that professional pride. Let's drag it. We've got the talent. Let's not waste it, lads. I think it goes back to, again, recruitment. I think Gino's policy is he's got columns of players. And as long as he's got enough that comprise on paper a squad, 2.5 left backs, 2.5 right backs, some centre backs, sprinkling midfielders, and some decent attackers. He's like, well, okay. Well, a head coach should be able to get a tune out of that lot, because every position on paper is filled. But that doesn't take into account who are the leaders. I think the biggest lead since Troy Troost, who was a leader but not good enough on the football pitch. And then we've got people like Tom Cleverley, who isn't loud, is obviously commands respect, but isn't gonna galvanise a team like that. Dan Gosling perhaps, but both have been injured. Who else is there? And it goes back to, they've built a collection of players. They haven't built a team. And what you've seen today, and you can use, I think, the 2 games against Millwall and perhaps the 2 games against Rotherham as the perfect example of what's wrong with this football team. Nothing from Millwall at home, nothing from Millwall away, and a point from Rotherham away, a point from Rotherham at home. Rotherham newly promoted. Millwall, you know exactly what you're going to get from them. Absolute meat and potatoes. You can prepare for that, you can build for it, and you can take it head on. You can tackle it head on if you're a better football team. And that is what this team is not. It is not unified. There is no unity. There is no confidence and belief. And you add all that together and you get what we've seen this afternoon against Wigan, and what we've seen 75% of the time this season.
Let's play a little bit of a game, Dave. Let Watford stay in
as
this.
As long as it's not division. Football.
As long as football. Well, definitely not you, Michael. Do you think the biggest problem we've had then this year is the fact that we don't have a championship side? And therefore, it's these games where we don't have the Watford at their best, or Watford playing the positions and the formations and everything isn't right for this division?
No, I don't believe that. No, I don't think that is a thing, really. No, I don't think so, because I think look at Burnley. Have they got a championship side? They've only got two. They've got Barnes and Brownhill. All the rest of them are sort of neat and tidy players. You wouldn't say they are a quote-unquote championship side. What they are is a good side, a side that's been well coached and it has been together from day one. Like Mike's completely right. It's not about having loads of lads who can mix it and get amongst it and all that. Good sides have those players in them, but they are good football teams and they're well coached and they have a plan, they have an identity, they know what they're going to do when they go on the pitch. And, you know, a byproduct of our ongoing situation here with various head coaches throughout each season is that we never have a clear identity, we never have a strategy. We've got a manager now who plays in a very distinct way, and you've seen it. He's implementing it already, but it will take time for those players to learn that system and to know where they should be on the pitch and build those relationships and those understandings with the players who are next to them on the pitch. I don't think it's about not having a championship team. If you have the best players in the division and a good coach, you should win it. But we've never had either of those things at the same time.
I was listening to the radio on the way here, and they were actually talking about Burnley and saying, you know, what they've built, what they've allowed Vincent Kompany to build. And let's not forget that it's really key. They sold some big names in the summer. They sold some players, reinvested it really, really well, but did it based around Vincent Kompany. And it stopped me dead in my tracks, because they were talking about the plan, the strategy, how they're going to play the football, what the identity is of that Burnley side in Vincent Kompany's image. And I thought, do you know what? I have not even thought about what that is for Watford for years. I haven't completely boxed it off. What is the strategy? What's the identity? Who are Watford? What are they? I haven't even countenanced it, because the chaos has been so all-encompassing that there's no answer to... Well, there is an answer to
this
that.
This is part of the problem we've talked about in the past, where we say, OK, if you've got this model, this approach where you say that you've got a structure in place that means if you need to change the head coach or the manager, you can do that. The problem is they don't go for the same type of manager. They seem to knee-jerk from one direction to another. We started this season with a manager who likes to play with wing-backs, to one that doesn't, to now one that does with overlapping centre-backs. And yeah, and again, it's just that sort of, oh, that hasn't worked, so let's try. It's the old throw enough mud and wait for it to stick. Not see what sticks, but keep throwing it, and eventually something will.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
What is the strategy? Where is this going? What is the plan? Etc., etc. Questions that we've been asking for a long time, as you say, Jason. Questions that every fan sort of has, and Mike. Watford fans got sight of the programme notes from today's game early from Scott Duxbury, in it of which he said that himself and Gino in the summer will face fans and will talk with fans. And, well, that's a great thing, surely.
Yeah, face fans. I like the way you put it, as that, as you're setting them up, as them against the fans. All joking aside, I mean, it's long overdue. I think we're all aware that there are EFL guidelines that suggest that Watford should be meeting with fans on a regular basis. That hasn't happened so far this season. So on that regard, it sounds like they're tackling that, and they are announcing that that is going to be something going forward, starting with this first meeting with Scott Duxbury and Gino Pozzo. So that seems to have been addressed, certainly in the long term. It doesn't sound like it's going to be this season. It's going to be in the summer. So arguably that's probably the right time to do it, because the dust will have settled and we'll be able to look back on the piece and discuss it. The other thing is that it's Gino, and for the first time, well, ever, he's going to speak directly to supporters. He's spoken exceptionally rarely to anybody. I think he's done a little bit of press here there in Italy, but over here he's, you know, could anyone tell us what Gino Pozzo's voice sounds like? Not really. So that's a big a big step forward, and a fascinating one. The detail in that in the programme notes was interesting, because it seemed to me, reading between the lines, and I saw it at the same time as everyone else. We did it from the Rookery at the same time as everyone else did. They're saying that it's up to the supporters to decide who attends, not just this meeting. I think it's important not to view this as a meeting with Gino. The meeting with Gino is the first in a long-running programme of club fan engagement meetings, and this just happens to be the first one. So the club have thrown it back to the supporters to effectively organise ourselves as to who goes, the royal ourselves, presumably based on the feedback that they got when there was that initial committee meeting. There was uproar about who was invited, and so the club have gone, okay, supporters, you sort yourself out. This is going to be the meeting. It's going to happen every, whenever it is. They'll put them in the diary. They'll say when it's going to be. They'll make people available, the management available. Watford fans, all of you, work out who's coming. And that is what I take from the programme notes. I think we'll have to work through what that means in reality and see how that falls. But it's, I mean, obviously Gino is a headline. And I think that is something that is worth, I'm not going to celebrate it because we're not in a situation where we should be celebrating anything, I don't think. But a chance for a set of supporters to address the owner in light of everything that we've talked about last week, everything that we've seen unfolding at the football club is obviously welcome, as is continued dialogue between supporters and the club.
So what are the questions that we should be asking Mr. Gino Pozzo? Because it could be the first time we see him, it could be the last time we see him, it could be the time for many, many years again.
If we don't get on really well, we could be busy mates. Could have him in my phone.
Gino, he's on the WhatsApp group, maybe.
Lad, have you seen this lad that plays for Hemel Storm? I reckon he could do a job up front.
Dave, what's the biggest question you think you should be asking Mr. Gino Pozzo?
Where do you start?
I've got one that I'd like to ask, and I think for me it's where I felt it went wrong was, and I think this is in the public domain, isn't it, that there was a bonus that the players should have been paid after reaching the cup final that was then withdrawn. I'd like Gino to tell us what happened there, please.
Really? Because I think I want to know what his Netflix is now, Jake. Yeah, I mean, there were definitely incidents from the past we need to talk about, but is there a bit more, you know, getting to, not to know him, like, what's his favourite Netflix show, but, like, getting to know him in terms of his brain? Because I don't want to necessarily pick him apart about why did you sack Rob Edwards after 10 games or what happened with Harry or any of that sort of detail of something in particular. I want more to know how does he come about choosing the managers and getting his, like, his, understand his thinking rather than explain yourself about this, that and the other.
I'd get that. I think what I'd like to do is come up with questions that we are then able to hold him accountable to. So what can you tell us that means that Watford is going to be financially can you tell us that Watford is going to be financially secure and how that is going to be achieved? And that's not necessarily a question I'd ask, but those sort of questions that put in turn are sort of KPIs that we then judge him against. Because I think closed answers will give it, if we're not careful, he will trot out the answers that I've always suspected he will. I remain committed to the future of Watford Football Club and it playing at the highest possible level. I remain committed to Watford having the best possible players and being active in the community, all that sort of stuff. I think we need to be getting from him is pinning him down on the stuff that we've been worried about and will be worried about in the future, so we can, at the next meeting, for example, if Gino says this, we can ask if it's Scott or if it's whoever, Gino said this, where are we at with that now? We need an update.
I'm interested to know when it comes around, how will the meeting be moderated? Who will chair it? What will the dialogue be? What will the sort of forum be? Because I think it's going to be important that it isn't just, as you say, Mike, a load of fans asking Gino questions that he probably anticipates are coming and he trots out lines that you would see in a statement. Are we allowed to ask follow-up questions? You know, is it a conversation or is it going to be sort of distanced and stage managed in some way? There needs to be an open, frank, honest conversation. He needs to, you know, and fair play to him, a lot of people have been asking for this for a long time and he's subjecting himself to supporters, and I think that is a positive step and I respect him for doing that. But he also needs to be able to front up, take difficult questions, give hopefully honest answers, but also allow for there to be a little bit of back and forth as well. And that's the thing I'm most intrigued about. I kind of want to see the whites of his eyes. I want to see how he deals with that, how he thinks, John. Like, I think you're completely right. A little insight into how he thinks and operates is just as important as asking why he got rid of Rob and why he changes the managers every, you know, 10 games or whatever. Like, you can get bogged down a little bit too much in the detail, and I think it is. You're completely right, Mike, as well. You've got to have... This is an opportunity to hold him to account and to be able to come back to it and say, well, you haven't delivered on this, this and this, if that's the way it goes. But I think it's an important step and a positive step from the club.
I don't think there's any desire amongst anyone who is engaged enough to engage with this process and end up in a room with Gino Pozzo. I don't think there's any desire to let him off the hook in the slightest. And I think that I can speak for myself, and I can speak for the frustration... Frustration isn't the right word. The desire to be comfortable in what is happening in the football club, to understand it and to have it... What are you doing? Tell us. And how are you going to achieve it? Just, we need to... People need to know it, because things feel to me like they're reaching boiling points a bit over the top. But there are concerns are swirling around now. The on-pitch performances are not... providing that smokescreen, because previously you can say, well, whatever's happening in the boardroom, we've got this player doing that, we're playing well, we're in the Premier League, we're challenging for that ain't happening. The football has fallen off a cliff, so everything else comes into sharp focus. So I don't think there is, I can say with certainty, there won't be, these aren't going to be puff questions that are headed his way. The time for that has gone, hasn't it? And it's about stuff that we can hold him accountable for. Yes, getting to know him, understanding the man, hearing his vision, like Dave said, see the whites of your eyes, allowing us to believe in him again. Yeah. I think is going to be key.
That was my next question. What is it that he needs out of it, do you think, for us as fans, for him to be, you know, he's the owner, not say the leader of this club, but what do you think he needs to achieve from this meeting, Dave?
I think he needs to, as Mike said, I think he needs to inspire confidence and belief in him. I think we need to come away from this meeting having hopefully got some seemingly credible, honest answers to searching difficult questions. I don't want to see him squirm out of them. I don't want to see him talking platitudes. I don't want to see Scott Duxbury to take the mic away from him at times and say, I'll handle that one, thanks very much, which is what's happened at previous forums. Mm. You know, they have to do it a certain... There is realities to some of these situations. There will be a line that there'll be certain bits of information that might be confidential, yeah, or whatever, that he might not be able to give chapter and verse on. But the spirit of it has to be in good faith. Mm. And that's what I want to see.
Because the thing, you know, going back to the supporters committee meeting from last year, you know, the point there was that nothing was necessarily secret. The topics that we would discuss were put out in public. But, of course, certain things were said, and it's great that they do share it with fans, details, but it wasn't publicly shared because it's a commercial business. But this is going to be very transparent, hasn't it, Michael?
Yeah, and I don't think there's any desire for it to be anything but. It is fan engagement. It's facilitating supporters who care about the football club talking to the custodians of the football club. There's no point in that happening if that can't be what's talked about and what's mentioned can't be shared. And I'd be astonished if there was any desire to quash or censor anything that's said there, unless, of course, it is confidential for a reason. You know, if we're looking to sign a player, please don't mention this because it might impact negotiations or whatever. That should be obvious. But this isn't just about talking to Gino. This is about Watford supporters now and in the future having a regular opportunity to speak to the custodians, the decision makers at the football club. It shouldn't be confused as an opportunity to get at Gino. It definitely is that, but it is the first step in an ongoing process of Watford supporters from the broadest church imaginable. You know, everyone needs to have an opportunity to get involved.
Well, the opportunity, definitely, but they're not all going to get involved. So it needs to be the opportunity to feed in your questions that you have. So, we know that in the time, whoever's in there is asking the right sort of question rather than, as sometimes happens at fans forum, the first question's often about the toilets. But you know what I mean? As long as everyone has that engagement with it, even if they're not there, they feel that they're engaged and they know their voice has been heard and those questions are being asked.
So I think the big thing is Gino is going to talk now. So as Watford supporters now have the opportunity to talk to him, let's get these questions right. What do you want to ask? You're now looking at him. You're sat opposite him. What are you going to ask him? But not just to scratch an itch about, oh, why did you get rid of Gerald Deulofeu? Not why didn't you let Troy go a year earlier? Why didn't you sell? Not that. Stuff that is going to move our understanding of what's happened, what's happening and why forward. We need to be smart, I think. And there's always a temptation to ask those sort of more granular questions that are interesting in the moment, but actually ultimately tomorrow's chip paper and don't help us understand the strategic direction, the real state of the football club, and don't allow us to then revisit in future meetings. And I think that's where we need to be. Watford supporters as a collective, all of us need to be clever and focused and use it as the opportunity that it is.
Well, we shall see what happens, how it pans out. But we'd like to hear your ideas and what you'd ask Gino. We had a couple of emails in already. And so we'll, spend the international break. We'll sort of gather this together because, well, we've got some games to talk about after the international break.
How nice it was to talk about this meeting because it meant we weren't talking about the football.
But we also had some amazing feedback yesterday from you. We put out a special podcast, a tribute podcast to Ollie Phillips, who unfortunately died beginning of February, and he was the long-term Watford Observer reporter. And thank you so much for all your feedback. We've heard the family have listened to it as well, and that's an amazing thing to know, and they enjoyed it. It's a wrong word to use, but you know what I mean. So thank you so much for that, and you can listen to that on the feed, and it might fill some time while there is no Watford matches for the next couple of weeks.
Hallelujah.
Thank you, DCW.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And thank you, Michael.
As always, you're very welcome.
Come on, you all!